Hi, I'm Sharad Kitten, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Tomorrow, Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia begins its annual general meeting. This, of course, is the party that, together with its partners in the Pakatan Harapan, took power in May. Parti Pribumi Bersatu, as I'll be referring to it, is very new. It is, in fact, the newest party in the Malaysian scene, and very important for that regard. Remember, it starts tomorrow and it goes on all the way to Sunday, and we're going to be giving you live coverage of the annual general meeting on Astro One, so follow our coverage from tomorrow onwards. I'm very lucky to have Dr. Rais Hussein Mohamed Arif. He is a member of the Supreme Council. He's also a member of the Policy and Strategy Bureau of the party, joining me tonight to help us understand where the party is going. Thank you so much, Rais, for joining me. Big questions for you. All eyes are on the party tomorrow. It's AGM. This is because, I guess, the big conference post GE14. Now, your Secretary General has come out to say that the debates, most of them, will be actually occurring behind closed doors and it won't be subject to kind of media scrutiny. Tell us why.
Thank you for having me, Sharad.
It's a great pleasure.
Nice to know that we are fellow Lasallians. That's good. Now, going back to your question, this is going to be the first time that we are having our annual general meeting after the election and after we are in the government. It's something that every one of us are looking forward. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of discussions, a lot of debates, a lot of presentation of views, contestation of ideas, and some are very open, some are held behind closed doors for a purpose, so that people can really voice out what they want and what they really feel about it and what we need to do. So most of the ceremonies are open, except that part where there's going to be some deliberation debates from the delegates. The only reason that we want it to be a more of like a closed door thing is because we want the delegates to be able to speak their mind. However, obviously, the deliberations, the whatever that's been discussed, eventually will be summarized and will be presented to the media and so on.
Right. In fact, your Secretary General Marzuki Yahya was quoted saying, "Even though our agenda is for the Malays, we do not reject the rights of others, especially other races, because this is Malaysian." He was saying that in the context of the anticipation that, as many of these political party conferences are, there's a lot of chest beating, perhaps a little more, you know, vociferousness and passion in the statements, especially around the question of Malay rights or the Bumiputera agenda. Is that something you think is the concern of your grassroots?
I think you must know that in Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia, Bersatu, we also have associate members who are the non-Malays, right? And they have a vast chunk of them are Malays. We have championed the cause of the Malays, the Muslims, the Raja Raja, and all that. Now, if you remember, when on July 15, when we signed the Pakatan Harapan Coalition document, Permuafakatan Pakatan Harapan, we have clearly stated that all these things, which is the construct and that constitute our constitution, we must understand the history in the context. It will be defended by all. DAP signed to it, PKR signed to it, Amanah signed to it, and obviously we signed to it. So I do not think so much of that is the reason. It is more of allowing the latitude of the delegates to speak their mind, number one. Number two, of course, in every organization, in every party, you have this side and that side. And they have people who will be vociferous, borrowing your word, and there'll be some more circumspect and some moderate views. So we need to cater for every one of them. And in those debates, sometimes there could be some deviation from the middle path. So our view is that let them freely speak their mind. But at the end of the day, we are guided by our policy. In our constitution, we are very clear. We represent not only the Malays, also all Malaysians. In our Pakatan Harapan Coalition document, we are very clear. We said the same thing. And we have lived since the time that we took over the government until now on that path. So I think the path of moderation, path of the middle path that we have undertaken will continue. This is just to allow them to speak.
Okay.
So let us hear.
You want to, because sometimes, and UMNO had suffered this as a consequence of having their proceedings televised nationally, is that there were individuals who made maybe what some people would consider extremist remarks, and that, of course, didn't play well for the party. So in some ways, you're kind of helping to manage the party's image, is it?
We have to learn from history. Everything that has happened, if we just know but we don't learn from it, it's a problem too. So from our view is that we are a very young party. I mean, you all know that we just got into action sometime 2015, get it registered after upheaval 2016, fought against deregistration and all that. So we went through quite a thing. And we are still young. And relative to UMNO, which has been there since time immemorial. So as much as we are giving latitude to the delegates to air their views in closed doors so that we can come up with a proper consensus, the views can be moderated. Same thing. I hope that we will get latitude from the people that let us debate and discuss this closed doors. But at the end of the day, the narratives will also always be the same. We are signatory to the Pemuafakatan Pakatan Harapan.
Okay, so that is the basic document for the coalition.
Correct.
They're kind of signing on some basic values in a platform.
Correct.
I do want to ask you, your party must be extraordinarily energized by the fact that they are now part of government, something that nobody anticipated in the run-up to the general election. Well, what's the mood on the ground? I mean, what will we be seeing from the party in terms of how your delegates, you know, think about the issues, about their place in Malaysian history and so on?
In the context of the election, GE14, many people have wrote Pakatan Harapan out, wrote Bersatu out, but never underestimate Dr. Mahathir, never underestimate Mohidin Yassin, Tan Sri Mohidin Yassin. These two guys, I've been working with them so closely. God, they are walking encyclopedia of Malaysian politics, and they know things inside out. That's number one. Number two, there were many research houses articulating their findings. Some say the BN will win 2/3 majority. Some say PAS will not win any seats, blah, blah, blah. But there's one little known, unknown research house which did quietly with the help of 7 professors. And they did a periodic research under what we call What Malaysian Wants. 1, 2, 3. It was 7 altogether. And this particular research group have correctly identified what are the specific issues that is of concern to the people at that point of time. We know the ground is fertile, and we know what are the issues. So our job was to accentuate the anger, so to speak, to the voters, and to make sure that that anger will ensure they will vote us. So that was our job. Then this same research house have given us a reading, a forecast of what the result is going to be. And the result was very close. The deviation was 0.89%.
Are you going to tell us who this what this research house is?
Okay, this research house existed in a very loose form, and with the help of 7 professors from a local university. Obviously, at that point of time, these 7 professors' name cannot be mentioned because they'll get sacked. But the good news is that these 7 professors have done this nation a lot of service because they provided real intelligence in terms of what is really happening on ground and what we need to do.
Okay, you still haven't named the research house yet.
I will name now. That research house has metamorphosed into what we call EMIR Research. And today, that EMIR Research is existing as an entity, and these 7 professors will join this entity and continue to do the excellent work. The differentiating factor of this particular research work, they are independently funded, number one, so they have a critical distance from the government, so we will not end up becoming a person who write a coffee book with leaders smiling and, you know, photos and all that, so we do not want that. And that's important, critical distance from the government. Number two, we have professors who are very competent in the area. Remember, the deviation was 0.89%. And number three, these professors have sworn to speak the truth and present the brutal truth about the findings. Oh. So we will continue the research work, And beginning this coming year, 2019, every quarter we will have polls with proper scientifically sound methodology, not some plucking from the sky, the polls, the people's feeling, and become a feedback mechanism to the government without being aligned with them.
Okay.
We are critical this time.
Okay, we're going to have to hold that thought because I'm going to ask you about Rafizi Ramli's poll on Dr. Mahathir and his popularity.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
Okay, we're going to come back to that. Okay, I'm going to come back to it. My guest tonight, Rais Hussein Bersatu, Supreme Council member and also part of its Policy and Strategy Bureau. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Rais Hussein Bersatu, Supreme Council member and also member of the Bureau for Policy and Strategy for the party. The party having its big annual general meeting starting tomorrow night and all the way to Sunday. Astro Wani is going to be following that story very closely, to the extent we can. We do have on the line now Bridget Welsh. She's an associate professor at John Cabot University. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us. I understand you're in Kota Bharu. How's the weather there?
Oh, it's lovely and sunny, not too much rains. Unfortunately, the floods have not yet come.
Okay. It's always nice to spend Christmas in actually a very picturesque part of the country. I want to begin with this quick question. Since we are talking about Bersatu, the political party, is building the party's representation in parliament the most urgent task for it at this point in time, as you see it?
Actually, no. I think the most urgent task is actually governing deliverables, in the sense that it looks like that the party is actually being able to function as a party in terms of actually carrying out policies, improving the economy, and so forth. I think one of the problems that Bersatu faces is that Bersatu has to deal with the issue of building its legitimacy, and this comes from its holding its position in government.
Okay, so you're talking about its position in government, but for the party itself, considering that it's one of the smallest parties in the coalition, and the fact that it has Dr. Mahathir, its chairman, as prime minister, is in part of a compact that was done before the general election. Do you think going forward the party will be considering the fact that it doesn't have as the kind of heft that allows a PKR and DAP to somehow dominate the scene?
I think one of the issues that people tend to focus on is the interdynamics within the coalition. And there's a lot of emphasis on the size of respective membership and also the composition of that membership in terms of traditionally whether or not it's Malay or not Malay and in that context. I think this is actually one of the things that's been contributing to the instability that people perceive within the coalition itself. And it's not healthy. I think that that generally, in terms of looking at Bersatu, its greatest strength is its leader Mahathir, and as a consequence, it's not as important that it has a smaller number. What it needs is actually to be able to wield the power that it has through its leadership in terms of defining itself post Mahathir, and also in terms of putting itself as having a different forms of legitimation that define it. The party has an identity dilemma about which it says, what does it stand for besides Mahathir? And I think this is something that the party itself is facing.
Well, you know, Bridget, I have with me Rais Hussein, who is a member of the Supreme Council of Bersatu. He's joining me this evening. I do want to ask you, though, since I am going to be putting these questions to him, do you see a second-line leadership emerging within the party? We have Dr. Mahathir, like you said, very strong, but also in his 90s, we have Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, also a senior and a veteran political leader, but somebody who's just had some health scares. Do you think and see within the party the development of a second line of leadership?
Salam Rais, nice to chat with you virtually through the phone.
Yeah.
But I would also say that that I think that there is, that we're, what is being tested in the second year tier leadership is how they're performing it as ministers in government. So there are people such as Mazli, such as, of course, Mukris and Kedah and others, and they are being tested. And the party still is a very new party. So I think who it brings in, how it brings them in, under what circumstances, for what purposes, how the ministers perform, these are the things that are going to are being defined very quickly. And this is why this party Congress that's going to be held this weekend is important, because it is part of the branding process and part of the grooming process. So far, it's not so clear who's going to be part of the leadership transition within that party. And it also, besides the issue that I mentioned, it's not clear what the party stands for. It has to define itself outside of the of being traditionally part of AMNO and outside of the crisis of Najib and, of course, post-Mahathir. And these are big challenges. I think there are people in the party, but I think the party has to somehow find a way to define itself longer term and to build itself as a more representative institution. It is not the same type of party that PAS or AMNO is in terms of having an institutional base, and it's probably not going to take those types of stances because it's going to take a long time to develop. But that's why using its perch of the government in terms of being able to deliver is actually critical.
Bridget, I'm going to ask Rais about the question of defections and defectors from AMNO, whether brand AMNO is so toxic, who's it toxic for? What's your take on the question of defections, Basatu allowing for former AMNO members to now join its ranks, or MPs rather?
Well, I think, you know, all the parties, many of the parties in Malaysia have been defined, especially in the Malay parties, have all had AMNO in their roots. I mean, PAS is similar. We see that also in the context of other parties in terms of how split from AMNO, such as Semangat 46 in the 80s and so forth. So I think, you know, the general perception among the public, many parts of the public, that this is now AMNO 2.0. And I think this is a very dangerous thing for Bersatu because first of all, AMNO's perceptions among large sections of the public were very negative. In fact, the overwhelming majority, as we saw in the recent election. The second thing that is also critical is that the many of the problems associated with AMNO, such as corruption, governance, are things that this party, especially at the early stages, doesn't want to bring into itself because it will burden them as well. And so this is where there has to be a very delicate balance of bringing in these other leaders because they're looking for security. They're looking for a safe landing. And of course, Pia Bersatu is looking for numbers. And so it's a short-term relationship, but this may be long-term very precarious. And I think it's going to have a very important negative branding for the party if they don't have other things that they can focus on and define the party as something that is distinct from who it's bringing in and the baggage that they will really weigh the party down.
Well, Bridget, I understand that. But, you know, what about those individuals in society, especially in Malay society, who might actually find this comforting? There is, in fact, some sort of bridging between the previous administration, 60 years of AMNO-led Barisan Nasional, into the new, into the new Malaysia. That in fact, that Bersatu represents some continuity in terms of policy, in terms of priorities, in terms of a pro-Bumiputra agenda.
I think there's a difference between what you just mentioned, which is the policies that they're adopting, the positions that they're taking on issues of racial representation and the issues of questions of governance, which I think are very important for large sections of the society, and the leaders who have been tainted in the previous government, many of the individuals, but I want to point out not all, have that taint. In that situation. So it's the question Bersatu has to ask is, will the short-term numbers in Parliament and in terms of positioning vis-a-vis other coalition partners be as important as the negative dimensions of the individuals being brought in the area and the type of politics that they want and they have a practice. And this is the politics of patronage, this is of money, of deliverables in terms of focused on to the individuals, not necessarily to large sections of the society. And that's the real crux that actually weighs them down in terms of choosing some of the individuals involved.
Okay, last question for you, Bridget. Is it possible that the bringing in of defectors, at least in the parliamentary game, it'll bolster the numbers to such an extent that Pakatan will achieve its two-thirds majority and therefore be able to push to its own legislative agenda, its reform agenda, that requires, at least some aspects of it, requiring two-thirds majority? Is that the end game, do you think?
Obviously, being able to get through some of the constitutional changes is extremely important. For example, giving younger Malaysians a vote from the age of moving from 21 to 18. But I'm not so sure that the process of bringing individuals is the right set of solutions. So, there are a lot of people, there are other avenues to get some of these numbers. For example, alliances through Sarawak, and of course, and framing some of these policy issues so that any of the opposition individuals, it becomes a political liability for them not to choose to vote for it, such as the issues of electoral representation, the issues associated with younger voters. So I think that this is not a zero-sum numbers game as being painted. There are other avenues as well. And one of the problems with this, the issues of the end game of being about the two-thirds and that being a discussion of it reflects insecurities within the coalition, and it feeds some of the sense that there's a power struggle and that the coalition is not working well together. These are perceptions that are fueled by these particular areas. Bringing in defectors will put strain on the coalition in quite serious ways, which of course this is normal. There's always strains in coalitions. There's always compromises. This is part of what the nature of coalition politics are. But what the side thing here is, which is that this is taking away from the actual reform issues and governance issues that most Malaysians are really looking for.
Okay, thank you so much, Bridget. That was Bridget Welsh, Associate Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University, speaking to us from Kota Bharu. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Arais Hussein, a member of the Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia, or Bersatu as we call it. He's a member of the Supreme Council, also part of the Strategy and Policy Making Bureau of the Parti. Again, thank you very much for being here. We just heard from Bridget Welsh out in Kota Bharu about her thoughts on a range of issues for the party. One of the things, let's pick up on the defections issue, because obviously that's much debated. In fact, I had some tweets myself, one from Viknes Ayappan, who talked about moral authority. I mean, that's a very powerful idea that this coalition came to power because of a kind of Malaysian demonstrating that they had a moral compass and they were, aghast at the conduct of the previous administration and therefore wanted them out. So far at the parliamentary level, correct me if I'm wrong, you've taken in three MPs from UMNO, Mustafa Mohamad Noor Azmi Ghazali and Mas Emirati Shamsuddin. 12 other MPs apparently have quit UMNO, and there's speculation that they might cross over to Bersatu. Can you address that? Are you expecting 12 more MPs to join your party in the coming months?
First of all, this is speculation, right? Most of them, when they left UMNO in their own vocation. They decided that enough is enough. They've seen through whatever happened in the past. And some of them may not know the entire story as much as we did when we realized and we got out of UMNO. Personally, I'm also from UMNO. And
But you left before the election. Correct. Is that crucial? Isn't that crucial for Malaysians?
It is crucial. We left and we have a lot to lose at that point of time. I write a lot. I tweet a lot. And I was arrested for that. And I was detained for that. I was interrogated for that. But yeah, everyone have their various intensity of responding to situation and circumstances. So some of us left. Tan Sri Mohidin, he was a deputy prime minister of Malaysia. He took the mantle. He spoke against what is now known as the grand theft of the nation, and he got fired.
So, right, so we established the moral authority of those who left before the elections, right. who had everything to lose, as you put it. These people coming over have everything to gain by coming over to Bersatu now, now that it's clear who's won the game.
Okay, but at the same time, we must understand their context as well. Now, yes, they have fought against us. I mean, all the MPs on the other side have fought against us personally, on a party level, in the elections, and so on and so forth. And they won some, they lost many, and therefore they lost the government. So we are clear with that. But coming to Bersatu does not mean it's a out-of-jail-free card, you know? No, it is not. We have our, as Tan Sri Mohidin have announced, we have this special membership vetting committee headed by Dato Sri Mukris. And this committee have a certain set of criteria, chief among which is they must be free from MACC investigation, they must be free. So they have go through the vetting, MACC, the police, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, but the question would be, Rice, why do you need them now? Why not wait out the term, G15, fight them or have them come over and fight on your side? I mean, why the urgency of having them move right now?
Okay. The urgency, if you notice, it is not like we are trying to, hey, come, buddy, join us. You know, no, we didn't say that. It's when someone left on their own vocation from UMNO and become independent, and later on, they submit an application, and we vet them, and we vet them, and we found them, there's nothing wrong with them, no MACC issue, no police issue, or no any other scandal, blah, blah, blah. It is only a democratic right for them to join us. And also, it is also our right to accept or to refuse. We will refuse some.
Okay, but the question...
And who are we to... For instance, let's take an example. Defections...
You don't want Bong Mokhtar. Okay, that I understand.
It's not only Bong Mokhtar. For instance, tomorrow, Najib Razak comes and applies for Bersatu. Hell no.
Yeah, right? Well, that's the most extreme example.
Hell no. Okay, so these are the examples that we want to show. But at the same time, even though there are some in our own coalition partners talk about these crossovers and so on, they themselves too accepted some crossovers. PKR have accepted two, Amanah have accepted. So the thing is this, in a democracy, and democracy is a hard work, boss. Very, very hard work. It is not 1 plus 1 is equivalent to 2. PAS will say 1 plus 1, inshallah, 2. But this one, it's not 1 plus 1 is equivalent to 2. Democracy is a very moving dynamics. It is not so much as we are trying to entice them with position and power. You come here, get... In fact, we are telling them, if you come here, you cannot hold position, you cannot do this, you cannot do that. So many things.
But so why are they coming over then?
I think, you see, this is the various reasons for them to join us, right? Some, they say, okay, now I'm aware what happened. Maybe it is time for me to join you guys. We want to strengthen the party and blah, 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 you know. We want to make sure that the agenda is preserved and protected and so on. You must remember, if you, for the clean guys, I'm talking about those cleaned by the vetting process, clean guy. If we don't accept them, either they're going to go into one of our coalition partners or you do not want them to go to the right-wing pass.
Well, PKR said it's not going to pick up anybody from UMNO.
Well, PKR already accepted, maybe not from UMNO. They've picked up two or one. Yeah, so.
Okay, well, let's look at the problem from an internal perspective. I understand Bersatu is a very young party, but 65% of its membership are actually quite young. They're youth. Does this present a problem for them? When they see older veteran members coming from UMNO into the party, people who did not struggle with everybody else to win this election, the previous election, do they feel betrayed? Do they feel that they are going to be threatened because of these new entrants?
I think when you join a political party and you take up a struggle, position and relevance should be the last thing on your list. When I joined the party, when Tan Sri Mohidin took up the fight against Najib, it is not for the post. Tan Sri Mohidin lost everything, but he took up the fight. He stood for the truth. His biggest brand at that point of time was truth. He fought. So it is not about those who have struggled to liberate this country. Mind you, not just Parti Pribumi Bersatu. Our friends from DAP, friends from PKR, friends from Amana, we were working together as brothers and sisters to only one thing, to liberate this country from the kleptomaniacs, not kleptocrats, kleptomaniacs, because never unimagined the intensity of the money that has been stolen and robbed from the people. I mean, mind-blowing. So, as far as the coalition building, many people always refer to, hey, last time we had a more stable coalition, now the coalition is this and that. Let me ask you, how old is Barisan Nasional? 61 years. Pakatan Harapan, 1.5 years. You want to compare a 61-year-old man to 1.5-year-old baby? Come on. So that's number one. Number two, I'm putting things in perspective. You must remember, out of the four coalition partners, three of them are essentially opposition. So what do the opposition do? They're very good at opposing. Now we are governing. So they need some period of time for transition from opposition to become government. I'll give you an example. In India, Congress was always the ruling government. One year, I think Indira Gandhi lost it. The other group, I think BJP, won. Suddenly, they do not know how to govern because all this while they start, So they need a period of transition for the coalition to become firm. But one thing for sure, the coalition is so committed to the Pemoh Fakatan Pakatan Harapan, which we clearly outlined, which includes what are the things that we must do, we need to do, everything in order.
Okay, and one very quick answer from you. Do you stand by the succession plan that Dr. Mahathir will be stepping down and Anwar Ibrahim will be taking his place? Is that something that Bersatu still stands by?
Pakatan Harapan have agreed with regards to all the four members in the Majlis President, the Presidential Council. We have agreed that this is how it's going to happen.
And nothing has changed?
Including the transition plan. So far, I have yet to see anything that shows to the contrary. I don't see. Well, there will always some people being both sides of the camp. They will be in one camp. They will be rushing him. Hey, boss, what is this? You know, we are already there. We have the largest number. On the other side, the guy wants to be relevant. Say, hey, boss, you know, we need to stay. You know, otherwise, if you go, I'm gone. And he will not say that. So this is more of a conflict of competing needs by individuals. As far as the statesmen's, Tun Mahathir, you must remember at one time, Dr. Wan Azizah was offered the prime ministership that night, but she refused. She stood by the Pemoh Fakatan Pakatan Harapan, the agreement. So I do not think, and I do not see as yet, anything that will point to the not honouring the particular commitment that's been given in the Pakatan Harapan agreement. Okay. So I don't see it.
Okay, we'll go. Hold that thought. We'll be back with a deeper look at Bersatu and its internal dynamic. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Rais Hussein, a Supreme Council member of Bersatu, that's Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia. They're having their annual general meeting starting tomorrow night. Astro Wani is going to be covering that all throughout the weekend, so stay tuned to coverage of that. It's also part of the strategy and a policy bureau of the party. Rais, there was a question that was brought up around Dr. Mahathir. Bridget Welsh mentioned it earlier about how important an asset he is to the party. Interestingly enough, Rafizi Ramli from PKR recently said that from his think tank that Dr. Mahathir's popularity has plunged. Now we have alternative numbers saying that actually that's not true. It's his popularity is held. What's going on with this? The question of how important Dr. Mahathir is in the story of Malaysia Baru and the politics of our times.
I think we all must accept and admit Tun Dr. Mahathir was a very huge factor in us winning the GE14. Obviously, the people voted for a change. They just had enough of the past. And Tun Dr. Mahathir gave that particular strength, that added vigor, especially from one group of the people, which is the Malay voters. So that really enhances in every sense of the word, and we won. So we need to address, we need to accept that. And consistent with that, we need to also accept the magnanimity of Dr. Wan Azizah and Anwar Ibrahim, Guan Eng, Lim Kit Siang, Mohammad Sabu. These are all people that Tun Mahathir once arrested them under ISA or whatever. And they all worked together because there was one common aim of liberating Malaysia from the kleptomaniac. So Tun Mahathir is very important, very critical for this. Coming to what it is today, he is providing the balance in terms of leadership, whether it's in cabinet or even in Pakatan Harapan. I think we also see a lot of first-time ministers being given the ministerial portfolios. Some are doing extremely well, some are struggling, some are can do better. But at the end of the day, we all know Tun Mahathir balance is very important in providing that.
Okay, but coming back to Rafizi, Rami, because you think you've just avoided my question, which is Rafizi has come out with numbers suggesting that Tun is less popular than he was several months ago. Now, when you see those numbers coming out from Rafizi, do you take them at face value? Do you think it's just a question of methodology, or do you agree that his numbers are correct? Okay, do they reflect what you see on the ground?
Okay. Rafizi is a good friend of mine, and I have very good relationship with him, and we differ in few things and many things. And one of the things that I usually have issues with is his methodology of research. When he came up with some studies before, I questioned the methodology because I tried to understand the method that he used. As we speak, there was another study that was released by the academics of International Islamic University, which about 1,500 polls and 1,400 polls. This is like a real people, it's not robocall. And that study shows reverse. That shows that the support has been constant. It has not improved or not declined. As far as Rafizi is concerned, what we all hear is 20% across the state. I don't know. I may not be able to comment too much on it because I've not seen the methodology. But I think there are many other think tanks and research houses should start doing these things.
But, you know, do you think, right, and this is maybe a part of the conspiratorial turn of mind that a lot of us Malaysians have, which is that these statements are put out in order for a political end, which is basically to say that Dr. Mahathir isn't as important as everybody says he has been since, you know, the last, since mine, and in fact, paving the way for the return of Anwar Ibrahim to take the mantle of government. Is it that is the subtext of such a poll?
I think in many research, the most important thing is the methodology. If the methodology is not sound, there's a problem, number one. Number two, there's something called outcome-based research and research-based outcome. Okay, what's the difference? Outcome-based research, you determine the narrative, then you do a research work to justify your narrative. Research-based outcome, research guides your outcome. So I will only say that when building narratives, we need to be very careful. Plucking some numbers, 20% is that, it doesn't say much. Now, if you talk about conspiracy theory, I've already said earlier that the transition plan is part and parcel of the Pakatan Harapan commitment in the Permua Pakatan Pakatan Harapan. It was signed on July 15, 2017. I've not seen anything to the contrary. Everything is going smooth. And my view is, and my appeal actually is, neither party should do anything to disturb the harmony of the Permua Pakatan Pakatan Harapan. Because we do not want the repeat of 1998, or we do not want the repeat of any other things that will disturb the balance. I think, as what Bridget said, we should be focusing on delivering on what we have promised in the manifesto. Yes, manifesto There are many things that we have promised, 10 promises within the 100 days, 60 promises within the first term of 5 years. Of the 10, we have delivered 6. Of the 60, we have delivered about 21. Work in progress. But remember, all those was written given that time reality, because we never knew there was something called red files. Numbers were camouflaged. The loans, I mean, the national debt was not really stated openly, and many other things. But be that as may, our manifesto was written through hardcore research, through engagement with all the stakeholders, everyone you can think of.
Okay, before we take a break, a very quick question for you about the jostling that's happening within the component parties of Pakatan Harapan.
Jostling?
Well, the jostling for recognition and relevance, right? The question is whether you think your members are concerned about this. Are they concerned about the succession issue? Are they concerned about the impatience perhaps coming from certain quarters?
I think the jostling for position and relevance is more of a perception than really a reality. Even if there is, it's a very pocketed, it is very marginal. It is not something that is very big. And it can be easily managed, those kind of things.
And also, very quickly, succession plan, Dr. Mahathir, your chairman, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, your president, are they going to be there for the foreseeable future, or are you already determining who's going to take over and who could that be?
Parti Bersatu is a very democratic party. We have members who will determine who will be the leaders. For now, we have Tun Mahathir, who is, I mean, you cannot really define him. He is above definition. He has won 5 general election with 2/3 majority.
But he's also 93.
And he won the 6th general election with still won as an opposition leader. He's 93 years young, but the way he works, he's 39 years young. He works 18 hours a day nonstop. He reads files, he reads code. I don't know where he gets his stamina from.
And even more so, then, is everybody then deeply in the shadow of Dr. Mahathir? Can you have young people emerge when the party is led by somebody so strong, and in your terms, so superlative, that you can't even imagine approaching it?
Then we have Tan Sri Muhyiddin. Tan Sri Muhyiddin equally works hard, smart, and you know, he has so much of experience. And yes, he went through some health situation, but alhamdulillah, he's very well now. Before coming here, I was sitting out with him and chatting what the things that needed to be spoken about, blah, blah, blah. So you have that. Then come along Mukhris Mahathir, who is young and who already been 2 times chief minister, and he has a good experience in ground up politics. That means not in UMNO, in Parti Pribumi Bersatu. We have to all work, put the things together, you know, all this kind of thing those days. So Mukhris is there. Then remember, we are the first party and the first prime minister, our chairman is the first prime minister who appointed a 25-year-old as a minister.
Okay, we can talk about his his report card later on. We're going to come back with a deeper look at Parti Bersatu and its AGM coming up. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Rais Hussain, who's a member of the Supreme Council of Bersatu, also a member of its Policy and Strategy Bureau, and the party is going to its annual general meeting tomorrow and for the weekend. Rais, we had a question actually from Twitter asking you, and this is from Siva, 782. He says, why didn't you contest the last general election?
Okay, I was asked and to be considered as someone to contest in the election. I think the constituency was Tapa.
Tapa. Tapa. Okay.
Tapa in Perak. Yeah, I visited the place and had a look, and then really look at myself. Then I realized I'm not a grassroots politician. To be a politician, you need a lot of things that perhaps I'm not the best person to be a grassroots politician. So at that point of time, that was a decision that I made, and I communicated to my party. My party accepted that, and we had an alternative candidate. That was the reason. But remember, I was not a politician. I was roped in to help Parti Pribumi Bersatu. We had very memorable time in how we started forming the party. I was involved from scratch, even before the constitution was written, with Tan Sri Mohidin, of course. And Tan Sri Mohidin is the one who persuaded that I should partake. I was thinking very hard then. That is the reason why I actually joined Parti Pribumi Bersatu. And my favorite tagline until today is, I'm not a politician. People don't believe that, but 85% of people do not believe politician anyway. But I'm not a politician, so anyway.
Okay, so let's look, coming back to the AGM, and I'm sure people are going to be talking about this extraordinary journey. Very short journey, very unlike, you know, your partners in PKR had a 20-year journey, the DAP even longer, and so on and so forth. But what is it that the party stands for? And I think Bridget was asking this as well. I mean, is there going to be some deep thinking about how it wants to project itself, the values it stands for, especially as it's defined itself as a Bumiputra, a pro-Bumiputra party, but within this multi-ethnic coalition, and a time when Malaysians are also very ambivalent about the move towards a new Malaysia. Some people say post-racial, others not. We had the ISED debacle for the government. Where does Bersatu stand in all these questions?
I think we are very clear. We are a party that represents the interests of the Bumiputras and all Malaysians. That is written and engraved in the constitution. So that's very clear. In terms of value, we want to come up with the value of Budaya Bersatu. What is Budaya Bersatu? We talked about dignity, marwah. We talk about, these are the three things that is very core to us. The Bersatu, bermarwah, dan integrity and all that. These are the things that is going to color ourselves. Remember, no matter how small we are, how young we are managed by someone who had run this country for 22 years successfully. Tan Sri Mohidin, he has been there, done that, seen that. Datu Sri Mukris and the others. So we have good people to help guide us. Now, we want to make sure. There are many policies that has been good. When we talk about Agenda Bumiputra or the Bumiputra empowerment policies, if you look at it on paper, it is nothing wrong with that. Because you are just having affirmative action for these people. And also, other Malaysians or all other Malaysians are not excluded from that. The only problem was, if you notice in the past administration, was the implementation. So what happened is that the fruit of that Bumiputra policies was enjoyed by 0.5% of UMNO Putras. Even within UMNO, 99.5% did not enjoy it.
Okay, I know I'm going to be opening a can of worms just so late in the day. But the question is, when you divide the population, all citizens, between Bumiputra and non-Bumiputra, aren't you establishing a division that cuts to the heart of the country, that in fact is not good for our future? That, yes, you say maybe it's an implementation issue, but fundamentally, philosophically, splitting the population between Bumiputras and non-Bumiputras, is that a healthy thing to do?
It is not mutually exclusive kind of situation. Why I say that? You have PKR, you have... DAP, DAP is by and large is a Chinese party. Amana by and large a Muslim Malay party. PKR is a little bit mixed, and us, PPBM. Now, when we set up the party, what was our goal? Our goal was to win the election. If we want to win the election, if you establish a party like PKR or the multi-ethnic this and that, we will be defeated from day one. We need a party that will represent the majority. Remember, due to years of gerrymandering, 42% of the rural voters determine 65% of parliamentary seat. So we need to be realistic. it's nice to live in a utopian world. Everything is nice, fair, dandy. But actually, if you look at it, let's take ICERT. Everybody is crying the lungs out on ICERT. Pass, and despite the fact that we said we are not going to ratify ICERT, still Pass and UMNO went ahead doing this, right? But let's look at ICERT. China is signatory to ICERT. Saudi Arabia is signatory to ICERT.
Israel is a signatory to ICERT. Which allows the Palestinians to fight back too.
But what? Fight what? The Palestinians have been butchered every day. Uyghur Muslim, 1.1 million internment camps. Can you imagine? That's the almost like a Hitler camps, you know, Nazi camps. 1.1 million. You cannot do what you want to do. Saudi Arabia, woman only recently was... The thing is, let us not get into the semantics. I know a lot of people like cosmetic. For me, ICERT is nothing but cosmetic. It doesn't have the teeth to enforce. Otherwise, long time ago, Israel will be punished. Saudi will be punished. China will be punished. Are they? Okay. So, again, we must always understand in the context and the construct. Malaysia, we have our own context and construct.
Okay. Unfortunately, I had to stop this conversation here. Must have you back soon, perhaps after your AGM. I'm sure it's going to be exciting and exhausting. I've been speaking to Dr. Rais Hussein Basatu, Supreme Council member and also member of its Policy and Strategy Bureau. Tomorrow onwards, AGM for Basatu and Astro One is going to be covering it. Thanks so much for being with me. I'm Sharad Kutin. This is Let's Talk, only on Astro One.